This is the Storage Unpacked podcast.
Hi, this is Chris Evans, recording another Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm joined by Martin and Chris Miller this week. Hi, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Chris. I'm glad to be here.
Eventually.
Yes, it's my late Chris Miller again.
Oh, dear. So, I've risen from the grave to attend this podcast. Some things are very important.
Your car didn't break down this time.
Can we talk with that offline, please?
Okay, we'll leave that one for now. Right, so this week we thought it would be fun to have a chat about where we see some of the mid-range products going, specifically the ones that we have in the Dell EMC stable. Now, Chris, I know you wrote an article about this just recently. Mm. In fact, some of it we actually discussed in the airport before you did write it, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah. So just take us into a bit of background as to what your article was about and what you think might be happening.
Okay. Dell EMC have always had, ever since the EMC acquisition by Dell, a plethora of mid-range storage arrays, notably Extreme.io, Unity, and the SC series, also the Equalogic series. But that kind of got subsumed into the SC. So the SC was on the Dell side of the house. Extreme.io and Unity were on the EMC side of the house. All three of those are now available in all flash configurations. So we have three competing all flash arrays. There's also the Scale.io product, which provides a virtual SAN of far more power and potency than the vSAN product. So Dell EMC's thinking seems to have been, we will converge the mid-range onto one platform. And this is a Dell-driven idea to get efficiencies and a simpler offer to its customers. And the thinking has been that we'll converge Extreme.io, Unity, and SC, and possibly the Scale.io software into something called midrange.next for the time being.
Wonderful. So we can expect that there is a new platform coming. I don't think we've got any timescales on that particularly at the moment, but we do think that there is going to be a consolidation at some point. I mean, to be fair, Martin, I would say it was pretty inevitable.
It's probably inevitable. I think it's also inevitable that we get a rebranded Clarion, because that's what EMC's track record is for this market. We have many attempts to move away from a Clarion, and we all end up back as a Clarion, but with a new name.
Okay, we'll come on to that in a second. Hold that thought for a little while. But let's start by thinking about how on earth they would actually move from three platforms into one. And my first thought would be, if I was a customer of any of those three platforms, what am I going to get at the other end of the process? Am I going to get something that is as feature-rich as the product I just had? Or am I going to lose out some of those key features that we had? Now, sorry, going back to you again, Martin, if you look at the SC series, the Compellent product had some very specific design features that I think a lot of customers were really, really keen on.
True, but I think historically, customers were very keen on Compellent. I'm not really sure it was a real feature sale. I really thought it was all about how much people loved Compellent and the support organisation. I don't see it having anything particularly smart and clever these days. It seems to have, everybody seems to have caught up. If you came down to it, if you looked at it, Compellent versus Nimble, I don't think there's a lot in it, really.
Okay, so Chris, do you think that the actual consolidation process won't make any difference, that customers will look at it and go, well, I don't really mind if it's Extreme.io, if it's Unity, if it's SC all merged into one. I'm sure it'll just be a generic mid-range box.
Dell EMC are promising that there'll be pain-free migration from the existing platforms to midrange.next. But will that mean that, as you think, I mentioned this, I believe, Chris, all the scripting type utilities that people have got on each platform will be transferable to the new platform? Or does it just mean that your data and main data procedures will be transferable to the midrange.next platform, but other things will be left behind? I don't know.
That's true. We did have a big conversation about that. And just to sort of explain what that means, I'm sure anybody who's out there who's deployed any sort of reasonable size enterprise storage platforms will have built scripting in terms of CLIs, and more modern platforms will have used APIs, but they will have scripted around things like automating commands, creation of learns, deletion, reporting, taking out maybe billing and other features like that. And what Chris and I were surmising was, as we migrate into a more consistent single platform, will those scripts and those interfaces change, or will there be some sort of like halfway house support model that will allow you to somehow transition and they'll deprecate bits of that API over time? I think that's, Martin, I would say that is a big risk for some organisations.
It is. And I think EMC or Dell EMC or Dell Technology, whatever they're going to call themselves this week, will allow some kind of translation, and they'll probably provide very similar CLI / API access into this new product. But part of me feels that actually that's a bad idea, because a lot of the old scripts and a lot of the CLIs, say if you've been a Clarion customer for the past 20 years and you've got scripts, some of those scripts are going to be very old, very inefficient. The new features and the way these arrays behave and perform, it's about time some people actually rewrote their scripts. We've seen it all over the place where SimCLI, for instance, we would throw Symmetrics. If you'd SimCLI will still work, but actually you probably ought not to be doing it that way. So some customers probably need to have to be forced and have their fingers banged with a hammer and say, let go.
Yeah.
But it's a very brave thing to do.
Swallowing the brave pill.
Yeah. But it really is a very brave thing to do, because that allows anybody who's then looking at a refresh, and if they're told this refresh is more than a refresh, it's a migration, there's a transition, it becomes a lot scarier and opens it out to a lot of other vendors. So I suspect, being a sales and marketing-led organisation, they'll provide translations just to actually ensure customers feel happy, if that makes sense.
Absolutely it does. I was just thinking through some of the experiences I've had with the mid-range stuff. Obviously, I agree with you on the high-end solutions enabler features. You know, there was still support for that. But my experience with the Clarion side of things, I was involved with a company that was writing a tool that would extract configuration data from many different platforms, one of which was Clarion /VNX /whatever you want to call it. And one of the things that we found that was that there was no direct API, so we had to take the CLI output, which was basically free-form-ish text. It wasn't XML. And we had to cut it up and do column parsing with it using scripts. And the trouble with that was, even when we went between point releases, somebody would, for example, think, oh, this column needs to be 5 characters wide now instead of 4. So all of our scripting would be wrong. And somehow we'd have to try and work out whether we were talking to version 1.1 or 1.1.1. And even just between those versions, there could be a significant difference. So it's by no means a small challenge for IT organizations to rewrite scripting they may have, and also possibly to even understand what actually might break.
Can I push an oar in here?
Go for it.
I think the three main hardware platforms, Extreme.io, Unity, and SC, one of them will become the development platform for midrange.next. Mm-hmm. And the other engineers can spend their time, some of their time on the other platforms, working out the nitty-gritty migration details. After all, they're not going to have that much else to do. The future, say Unity, as Martin supposes, is the future-based platform, and that Extreme.io and SC both have to migrate to this new refreshed Unity thing, then the Extreme.io engineers will be working an awful lot of the time on just exactly how to do that migration. And I'd imagine that probably well over 90% of the migration problems will be sorted out over the next year or so.
Well, I would say that there are some things that are going to be difficult. So, for example, in the different platforms, there will be features that exist and there will be features that don't. So, for example, say Extreme.io was the feature set that will be kept. You know, again, I'll just turn it on its head and try and say it the other way around. Imagine that was the platform that was kept. There's no option there to build RAID groups or distribute data in any way to the same degree that you could do with things like Unity previously, or, for instance, with the SC platform, where you could do cascading tiering and you could say, I want this particular tier to start out at RAID 5 and then move down to RAID 1 over time, or the other way around, whichever, you know, you built your tiering strategy. So the API at some point might just have to sort of blindly reject and say, yeah, I did that, that was fine, and accept that a command works, and in other positions it might actually do something. So that could be really tricky for customers to work out whether they've had something that's logically working because the syntax worked, but actually didn't do anything, and it could have a negative effect, you know, like the tiering scenario.
One of the reasons I'm wondering if Unity will be the one which survives is actually just the user base. I mean, kind of Extreme.io is not a huge problem for migration. They haven't solved that many of them. So they could probably send an engineer to migrate everybody who's got Extreme.io's. A, they're pretty small. They don't have much data on them, and who cares? Compellent probably did better, but Unity in its various forms is probably one of the most successful storage arrays of all time. And if they break that, and if they break the migration to that, the risk will be huge to them.
Well, let's think of it from this point of view. If you had a platform that was legacy in the sense, let's call it heritage rather than legacy because of all the customers and everything else. But at the same time, just like Chris said earlier, you want to sort of break it and say, You need to, oh no, sorry, you said, Martin, you need to break the customers and expect them to you know, to change. They need to change. Is it worth continuing to sell to customers and what you might class as a potentially inferior platform that still has a lot of legacy and throw away all the IP and the creation you have in a new platform? Or is it better to say, actually, we'll make the new platform just look like a Unity, and as far as a customer's concerned, it will look and feel exactly the same? I think it's a bit of a brave step to take, to make that step into deciding that you are going to throw away the platform that probably has the largest user base.
Yeah, it's got to be a risk base for whoever in Dell's going to make this. You're going to look at the impact. I mean, Unity's have been a cash cow for a long time, as have the sim ranges. So what risks do you take? And if you say, well, we Extreme.io or take Extreme.io, Compellent, I think that's an interesting one, because I wouldn't suggest its technology is dramatically different in many ways. Whereas Extreme.io is a very different architecture. Now, do you throw that away? You say, actually, you know what, that was a waste of time, or we invested in it, it's not been what we wanted. And we've talked about the problems, and you've blogged about the problems that Extreme.io have had in the past.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's almost a damaged platform. So if you're a customer and you found that EMC were building their next-gen mid-range on Extreme.io, and you started investigating in Extreme.io, you may have quite a negative perception of what it's going to give you.
Yeah, that is true.
You stick with Unity, you know it. Most customers, certainly in the mid-range, don't need the performance Extreme.io would give them, or Extreme.io is supposed to give them. Most of them will be happy with a Unity or Flash Array. It will do what they need it to do.
Here's a little comment to add into that, I guess. Which platform is the most feature-rich, and which one would have to have the most work done on it to bring it up to spec, to make it as feature-rich as all the others? And I would say Unity, you'd have fewer features for the customer-facing features to implement compared to the other two platforms. So there'd be more engineering work to have to do to bring the other two up to the speed and feature set of Unity.
Yeah, Unity is extremely feature-rich. I won't say that all the features work as well as they could do, or work, and probably none of them are best of breed, but it's got every feature under the sun. I mean, you've got dedupe, compression, you've got tiering, you've got thin provisioning, obviously Unity as well, you've got NAS connectivity built into it as well. So it's the most feature-rich storage platform probably in the world.
Doesn't that feel like a little bit of a defeatist attitude, Chris, do you think? Like you sort of say, well, we're going to have to go after that because it's the biggest user base.
We've got three product groups, Extreme.io, Unity, and SC, hardware, software product groups. And if I, perish the thought, were organising the development of midrange.next, and my engineering resources were these three product groups, I'd aim to take the best engineers from each of the three and form them into a virtual midrange.next development group. So each of the three sources, Extreme.io, Unity and SC, could contribute their own ideas to it. And that way, I'd get some kind of cooperation and comfort from the engineers involved in this, with none of the three groups left thinking, oh, well, we're stranded, we're going nowhere, let's polish our CVs and start phoning up the recruitment agents. That must be a concern of Dell EMC, I think, that they could lose an awful lot of talent if they shut off development for one product group or two product groups. And I think that Dell EMC are well aware of this and will do everything they can to keep their engineers on side and to make sure there's a future for people working in each of the three product groups for the time being.
Okay. I think you're mistaken, Chris. I think you're assuming Dell Technologies is a technology company, or a sales and marketing organization. If they have to cull two of the three teams, they'll cull two of the three teams. I don't think they'll take that approach at all. A, because politically it's extremely hard to do, to weave these three teams into one virtual team. There'd be so many fights over about which feature went where. You'd be better sacking off all three and starting again.
Would NetApp be a useful comparison? Because it had its ONTAP 7-mode to 8-mode migration process, which took a long, long, long time. And it also had its all FlashRay development process with the FlashRay team being set up and then basically canned with ONTAP all Flash becoming the product to be chosen.
So NetApp stuck basically with a variation of ONTAP.
But if you look back at the history of that, they moved code base, didn't they? So when they went to, and by that I mean the underlying version of the OS they were running, the version of Linux or whatever, or the Unix or whatever they were running it on. And what they tried to do was they tried to combine that and the Spinnaker technology together to create the clustered version. And they ended up moving forward a little bit in terms of the code base. But in order to achieve that, they had to take some features out. So there were some features that were not supported in the newer version of the ONTAP software, both of which, by the way, were all called ONTAP. So there was, even though there were two different products, effectively, they were both called ONTAP. You couldn't move between one and the other. They installed separately. And they sort of, I guess, fudged it to try and make it look like it was the same product, even though it wasn't. And they called it the same product. And they just sort of pushed through until they got to the other side, and bit by bit they converted customers and they'd added the features back in. Now, maybe that was a solution. Maybe it worked. Maybe they lost customers. I don't know. But it certainly didn't look good from the outside. And you certainly wouldn't want to do it like they did it. You'd hope that there'd be a better process. But then again, you know, it's very difficult to see what internal politics would be going on. And as Martin said, all these teams could just end up fighting with each other.
So EMC, the historical EMC, had a big problem with the SIM platform and the Clarion platform, where they had engineering teams fighting. I think if there's people around from those days still within EMC, and I know most of them have moved on, they'll take one look at this idea and say, actually, don't do it like that. It's a really bad idea. And then if you look at, as you throw up the NetApp example, we know ONTAP 8 was incredibly late because of the problems they've had trying to merge two very disparate code bases and trying to get one to look like another. So
exactly.
I can't see it. If they do it, they obviously haven't learned from history.
Let's move on and talk about Trident. So, Chris, you found something out about either a project or even a company called Trident.
Yeah, this was great fun. I found a company called Trident based in Herzliya, Israel, coincidentally not that far away from Extreme.io. And it was looking for a system architect. And various people, a couple of people on LinkedIn, had Trident product line or Trident technology in their specs. So the thinking this led me to was that Extreme.io is going to be the place where midrange.next product development takes place, and that's the base from which midrange.next is going to come.
So let's make an initial assumption. Trident, three-pronged fork, prongs to the fork. Now the question is, which way around is that pronged fork pointing? Is it pointing in such a way that the three prongs form into one handle, or is it saying that one product supports three existing platforms? So is it going to have three personalities as a platform and support all three of the older ones in some sort of transition mode before it becomes the final project, the final product?
I just think it's because they're forked, but...
It could be because they forked the code. Yeah, it could be that, couldn't it? It could even be a lot simpler than the conspiracy theorem I'm thinking of.
Well, I've just got a system architect advert up, just looking at it and looking at what they're looking for. We are looking for candidates capable of leading and specifying system design and specifications to address the system's complex management, control, and data aspects, coping with distributed, scalable, highly available storage system. So, yeah, it sounds like that really is Extreme.io. So maybe that's what they are doing.
I'm taking a positive take on this. I think that Dell EMC will be extremely careful to keep all three product groups and all three customer bases on board, that there'll be a long transition period, that Extreme.io, Unity, and SC will coexist for 12 months or even more with midrange.next, that they'll have point releases during that period, and that midrange.next will also have point releases in that period. And the tenor of this seems to me that the ability to migrate procedures and data and applications from the three source arrays to the new one will be steadily improved over that 12, 18-month period. I think Dell EMC are going to be doing a good job.
Okay. Well, here's one final thought on this, and then we'll talk about some of the other platforms outside of the mid-range. But as a customer, and I'll give that to you, Martin, first of all, as a customer, would this make you think this might be my opportunity to move away from a platform, number one? Number two, would you be now asking assurances from your vendor to say, I'd like to know exactly how you intend to do this to work out what my exposure and my risk would be?
I'd want a detailed roadmap so I could see what my exposure was. And I would be thinking, where is your development dollar going? Is it going into the platform which I'm on, or is it all going into this new platform? Because if it's all going into this new platform and you're basically end of lifing the platform I'm on, I'm going to be starting to look across the piece. So I would look for competitors. And I'll probably look for competitors of my existing platform. And a lot of times, because customers are very nervous moving to new platforms with no track record.
That's a strong, strong point. I'm sure that Pure and NetApp and IBM and HP will all be looking at this transition with a great deal of interest, thinking, is this a place where the door opens for us to go into the Dell EMC accounts and start making happy noises?
Well, I agree. And Pure have already put a blog post out. They put one out last year saying exactly that. Where is it? You know, where are we going with this consolidation process? So they've already started their messaging campaign on it. So, okay. Oh, well, so let's park that one for now then and see what happens really on that. But I think it will be interesting and it'll be one to keep an eye on as time goes by. But let's talk about the other products. You mentioned Scale.io, Chris, earlier, which has had a bit of a checkered history, shall we say, and it seems to have become a hardware platform or a software-defined solution on a hardware platform. But there's also the whole, what should we call it, unstructured data solutions that might be heading off in some direction. And I'm not sure whether there's been an official statement about where that's going to head.
No, I think Isilon is going to continue. There's a lot of activity in this scale out file storage space with Cumulo, Weka, Cray's Cluster Store, of course, and DDN. And it could be that Isilon needs a partner to cover the high end, the supercomputer high end HPC area too. I don't know enough about it to say so, but what do you think, Martin?
So I know quite a lot about the Isilon. Isilon's a mature platform. I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's been very successful for EMC. It doesn't give them massively high performance, and maybe that's one thing which they do need to look. But they do know, to a certain extent, they did take the eye off the ball for customers a little bit, and they've now been busily re-engaging. And I mentioned in a previous podcast where they did take feedback, and they have created a node which was specifically as a result of customer feedback. So they did listen to them. So I think Isilon's got a long future. I know at one point they made some mistakes in the ways they tried to sell it, and they did sell some Isilons which were too small. Isilon makes no point on a three node or a four node or a five node system. It's only when you get above that. At one point, people were starting to think of buying them as NetApp replacements, and it's just that's not where it belongs. It's a large system. So I can't see it going anywhere, not in the short term, and probably not in the midterm. Who knows how longer it comes. The only interesting thing is whether it becomes more of a software product. They do have Isilon Edge. I sometimes wonder why they haven't made it more of a software product. Certainly after what they did with Scale.io, it feels like ripe to do so. I'm surprised they've never done more with VMware, to build it more into VMware, to give VMware some file services. There's lots of things they could do. It's a good product.
I'm wondering whether with Dell EMC unifying the mid-range block arrays, that seems to be an absolutely massive job. And unifying the mid-range file and object storage systems could be a phase two, sometime 2021, say.
They can carry on almost running the mid-range file services almost as they do today, pretty much, if you look at the way Unity does. You could run all those file services out of a VM running on top of this. They just need to be able to present block to a VM, and they can provide all the services which you'd expect straight out the front anyway. So it's not I wouldn't have thought a new mid-range file services or object storage platform is a priority for them at all, because technically it's relatively easy for them to do.
Yeah. So we're saying pretty much we think that one's either mature enough or unlikely to change that much potentially.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's broaden the discussion then and think about whether this whole market maybe has too many products in it, whether there's too many vendors already in this marketplace, and whether we'll see rationalization and potentially how we'll see it. As an example, DDN seemed to have become very acquisitive, maybe playing an Oracle-style role here and being acquisitive about platforms that maybe and products and companies that maybe are in distress. So we know they acquired the assets of Tintri. We see that they've acquired Nexenter. I wonder if we maybe are seeing either some sort of consolidation, or maybe it was just an opportunistic buying moment. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's a very expensive opportunistic buying proposition to spend $60 million on Tintri. I think DDN really wanted to move into the more mainstream enterprise storage space, away from the academic and commercial HPC space. And Tintri provided one way of doing that. Its VM-focused storage, I think, impressed DDN a lot. Nexenter provides them a general mainstream file storage system and object as well. So yes, it's consolidation, but I think it's consolidation because DDN has got a real big ambition and wants to become a much more heavyweight enterprise storage supplier.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. But is it right to go after the products they've gone after? Because if you look at what they are, Tintree struggled in the market. Personally, I think some of the features I had in that platform were very good. And disclaimer, I did work for Tintree in the UK, so I should highlight that. But to be fair, I only was interested in doing that work because I actually like the platform. And I think go back in time and you'll find that I've said that many times that I like the platform. Nextcenter, I'd say less so. I just saw that as a software version of a dual controller solution for the mid-range. But of course, they had some other products, but I don't really know whether their products were any good. So I'm not sure, other than market coverage or feature coverage, whether that was a really smart move. And maybe this is all about just buying into those markets to have a presence before trying to expand further.
I think if I was going to be buying a software-defined storage company and I met Tarkan Manor, I'd be charmed out of my tree. The guy's got so much energy and charm and enthusiasm that he could probably make a dead duck look like a swan sailing in paradise. Having said that, I think the DDN guys are probably well aware of that and would be able to see past Tarkan's charm, see whether they were really getting a great product set or not with Nextcenter. I hope they did.
but to be fair, Chris, on that little note, if you put the CEO of Nextcenter with the CEO of DDN, that would be an interesting combination and an interesting dinner party, I would imagine.
That would be great fun because Paul Block is a real charmer of a guy as well, and cool and calculating inside that. And Tarkan didn't get to be where he is by being unable to deal with people and sell Wise to Dell and now Nextcenter to DDN. He may look like a fun-filled, charming, hey, let's have a ball type of guy, but he's clear and cold where it counts.
Yeah, true. Any thoughts, Martin, on that side of things?
I don't know, apart from Chris seems to be declaring some kind of undying love for two CEOs at the moment, which is somewhat concerning. I think the Tintree acquisition by DDN is interesting because DDN do know a lot about things like NFS. I've got a long track record in producing HPC NFS systems. So I just want, and they've got some smart engineers. I just wonder if they saw something which some people missed and thought, you know what, we can use this. And it may also allow them to start getting some DDNs behind some VMware type environments, something which I don't think they've really managed to do. And you're right, they do want to move into the enterprise space.
Yeah. Okay. All right then. So here's our final discussion for this little mid-range roundup, which is not really mid-range, I suppose. This one's gone completely high-end in HPC, and that's HPE buying Cray. Now, I will defer to say I don't really know that much about the HPC market and whether buying Cray is a good move or a bad move, other than the fact that I didn't think Cray was that big a company anymore. I could, you know, clearly be wrong on that. But yeah, I guess you've written on this, Chris. What do you think?
I think 1.3 billion seems to be a very fair price, to say the least, for Cray. He's not overpaying. It's nothing like overpaying in the autonomy class or possibly overpaying in the SimpliVity class, bearing in mind how HPE have dealt with SimpliVity since then. But the main appeal must be the Cray supercomputing stuff and how that tops HPE's Apollos by far. But Cray also get the cluster storage arrays, which are lustrous scale-out parallel access arrays. And that means HPE now has, I think I counted correctly, 4 high-performance computing storage array offers. There's scalable storage for Lustre, which is its in-house version of Lustre running on its own servers and storage kit. There's partnership with Cumulo, and there's a partnership with Weka.io, and now there's Cluster Store as well. So here we have mid-range excess, too many products in a nest, and perhaps some clearing out is going to happen there as well.
Yeah, see, the problem is, Chris, HP, if we go back into it, have a track record of doing this. They bought iBricks. That completely flopped. They bought PolyServe. That flopped. But they don't really they have a terrible track record in this space. Could we be seeing the death of the great name in Cray? I don't know. I'm not convinced HP or HPE have any idea what they're really doing in this space. But it sounded cool, and I just wondered, it's a cool name to have, but it's a lot of money spent on a cool name.
It certainly is. When I was in the Computer History Museum last weekend, I did go and have a look, and of course they have many Cray machines in there, some of which look absolutely unbelievably ancient by modern standards. But obviously, at the time, they were pioneers in their technology, you know? Can't knock them for what they were at the time, but as I said, I don't really understand the relevance anymore to see whether they're still part of what you might call, or that whether they still have a place in that high end. But clearly, HP think they do because they've spent the money.
They get a seat at the exascale supercomputing table because the US Department of Energy had just awarded Cray and Intel a contract to build an exascale supercomputer. So now HPE inherits that. And wow, this means HPE has big cojones in the compute space with an exascale supercomputer under its belt. Well, in theory and in future.
So maybe it wasn't such a bad move after all then.
I don't think anybody makes a particularly large amount of money out of these government deals because I know the US procurement screw things down. But yeah, it may. It gives them a seat at the table. There aren't that many people who are interested in exascale computing, really.
Well, we'll see, I'm sure, mini Crays coming out. Many mini Crays.
they can have some nice little giveaways where they sort of use the old Cray models and make them into nice USB drives. That'd look quite cool.
Martin, nobody's ever accused you of being cynical, have they?
Maybe.
Not so far today, maybe. I don't think.
I just look at it. I it's one of these things I don't really understand. It seems like nostalgia. We'll buy a Cray because it's a nice thing to do. Whether it really gives them very much, I don't know.
So maybe we'll tap somebody up at HP to come on and tell us. That'd be a great way of doing it. We might get an answer.
It would be a great way of doing it. Phone up Antonio, and I can fall in love with him as well.
Well. On that note, I think, guys, I think I'll say thanks very much for your time before we get into any more trouble. And we'll catch up in a little while and see how things have turned out. But for now, thanks for your opinions and catch up soon.
Cool. Pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Martin, it's absolutely great to have you on this podcast. You, I love your opinion. I just love them.